Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Bone of the Most Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen, in a world full of followers, be proud to be different, be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women, everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though, what do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. We got a hell of a show for you tonight. You know, when I first heard about this professor, it was through a friend of mine, and we'll get into that in a little bit. You know, you look at life and you take it for granted sometimes. You know, we live today, but we're not promised tomorrow. You know, life gives us its ups and its downs. I'm 53 years old, and I've lived my fair share of adversity. And sometimes life isn't always fair, but in this instance, it was a remarkable thing. With that being said, I want to welcome to the program Professor Javier Vasquez. Javier, how you doing, Professor?
I'm doing great. How are you, Don?
Well, I'm honored to actually have you on my show. You know, I saw you in a feed from a friend of ours, and I saw you talking about the release and the previewing of your documentary, and I reached out because it's an aspect of life I like to share on my show. I like to share the inner workings, the deep aspects of the sport, but we do it in a kind of a whimsical way, I guess you could say. I'm going to start the show off a little bit different than probably most shows that you've ever been on. What was life like, and what was the upbringing like for you, Professor, in the early years of your life?
I was raised by my mom. My mom and dad divorced when I was really young. We came from Cuba to America when I was 4 years old, and soon thereafter my parents divorced. So my mom helped, you know, for the most part was a single mother. And I was raised for the first several years going to school with my grandparents because she was off trying to get a skill to cutting hair. Or went to, what did they call it, school, beauty school, so she could learn how to cut hair. And then, you know, so she was doing that. So my grandparents did a lot of my raising in my early years. And today she's a respiratory therapist. She's always kind of like pushed me to, you know, get an education and kind of do that.
Most definitely. Now, would you say that watching that and learning from that type of situation, would you say that gave you the will and the thought process to later in your life further step into the art of wrestling? And how did you take that aspect of family and conjoin it with the sport? Because you were, I correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you were 15 when you got into wrestling.
Yeah, I was 14, 15 years old. You know, I was raised pretty sheltered, right? I felt I was pretty socially awkward as a kid. Social skills weren't super great. I was super shy and very insecure. And, my mom was kind of like always the rock. And she gave me – my mom is real important to me. She's the one that taught me how to work for what I want in life and to not accept no. And she's always, you know, shown by example. how to work hard and how to be a good person.
Most definitely. You know, further on in your life, you took up many aspects, many genres of the sport, and you fought for many promotions. What was it like for a young man to get those types of opportunities very early in your life?
Well, you know, when you're a little bit older, you tend to appreciate things a little bit more. And I was very, I thought I was, honestly, for several years, I thought I was the best fighter in the world, right? So I didn't really see them as opportunities as much as I should have at the time. I really, I guess you could say, I didn't quite understand the opportunity and what that actually even meant, right? You know, an opportunity to compete in the shows is an opportunity to promote yourself and for you to get a spotlight, because you have to do your own work. And that's not something I really understood. I thought, well, I'm the best fighter in the world. I'm the best guy. Nobody can beat me. So, of course, you guys should be promoting. That was kind of my attitude, and I'm not saying that was the right attitude, but it was the attitude I had at the time. I didn't quite understand that when you're fighting for a promotion, it's kind of like a team effort. They are promoting you. You got to promote yourself, and you got to promote them as well. So everybody can see things that way, unfortunately. And again, the opportunities that were presented to me weren't as valued as they should have been.
You know, you had a long, tremendous career, and many promotions. You know, when you look back at the sport, it has two things it could possibly do to you. It could break you or it can make you. And obviously it made you into the man you are at that time and even now as we speak. You know, when you look back at the career and as far as the MMA aspect, what did you take away from that? Because, you know, as we spoke before we went live, I'm transparent. We spoke about, you know, your last fight with Joe Daddy Stevenson, a fight that you didn't even want. So What type of memories of brotherhood, of friendship, of resilience did you take away from those days in the cage?
Well, that's a multiple layer, you know, question right there, right? So, first of all, like the people you compete against and you fight, there's a certain amount of, I guess, honor. You know, when you compete at a high level, and these guys are, you know, trained killers, and you're a trained killer, and you go to war like that, it kind of gives you, you share time in a moment that is very unique in your life with that other person. So I feel that they're, maybe you're not, you know, not everyone you fight is going to be your best friend, but there's a certain amount of respect that's exchanged when you put your life on the line and they put theirs on the line, no matter what the outcome is. And there is some sort of a camaraderie and a respect between two people. And I feel that, to be honest, you know, one of the main things I did it for was, you know, to get the respect of your peers, right? That's one of the most important things in a person's life is, you know, earning the respect of your peers, or it could be for particular people, right? And I felt very privileged and honored to say that I feel I've gotten that from most of my peers, right? So that's, you know, one of the main reasons I fought. Was to get that respect and admiration from you know, from your peers. And when you compete against somebody in that kind of an intimate environment, because fighting is as intimate as you can get, right? You know, even to this day, I've ran into Ramit Asado, who I fought, you know, many years ago, and he's super cool. He's always super respectful. Just and I beat him, and I would always have respect for even the people who have beaten me, but yeah, it's just kind of cool to experience that, somebody who lives in a different country and has different belief systems, and no matter what, through all those language barriers, the fact that you shared the a ring with that person and competed like that kind of brings you together. You know, I'd love to, at some point I'm sure it'll happen, but I'd love to talk to some of the people that I fought just to see where they're at in their lives, because it was just such a, for me, it was a huge moment in my life. You know, any time that you fight somebody, it's how can you separate yourself from those individuals, right? For good or for bad or for win or for loss, right?
Yeah. Most definitely. I mean, you know, there's so many things you've done in your career, you know, and we still got a story to get to, but I just want to touch on a couple more things. You know, in 2009, you were awarded the most inspirational performance of the decade by Sports Illustrated magazine for your fight with Alberto Crane. What did that moment mean to you, and how did you take it and perceive it and move forward in life?
You know, there's certain, I guess, milestones in everyone's life, or what do they say, like bookmarks, right? Things that really stick out in your mind. That you know, that fight, and the aftermath, right? The aftermath that I've had to deal with. I was very much in the moment that fight. I wasn't thinking about the future. I was thinking about the present. You know, I ended up getting hurt and continued to fight. And, you know,
he had a torn ACL.
Yeah. So, you know, I just wanted to win. You know, I had a UFC contract sitting in my fax machine at home. Like, I was ready to go to the UFC. 2002 or something like that, 2003, when the UFC didn't have a whole lot of shows. I mean, there was like 4 shows a year at that time, I believe. And, you know, losing was not an option. And I was just fighting, you know, and after I tore it, and, you know, going into the third round, my cornerman, Romy Aram, was like, just take him down and you're going to win this fight. So that's all I was thinking. If I take him down, I'm going to win the fight. So I got my takedown, and when I lost that fight, it was so crushing to me, right? Because I literally gave everything I had, and I still feel I won that fight, right? It changed me, man. It really – I didn't have to question I didn't have to question whether or not I could go to that place. I've gone there. I've been there many times, and I know I'm not going to shy away from a battle, and I know I'm not going to shy away from a fight. And you know, sometimes you know, they say fear makes a coward of men, right? And fear was not what I felt, I know that when the chips are down, because I have always asked myself, you know, if I was in war, would I fight or would I run? And I absolutely know what the answer to that question is now, without question. And that's a very cool thing to know. You know, it lets you know yourself at an incredibly deep level. What happened that night, you know, and I wasn't doing it to be famous. I was doing it because it's what I felt I deserved, and I wanted to be in the UFC so badly that I was willing to risk everything to get there. You know, and it's, that to me was an opportunity for me to show myself, and I felt that I did. And I look back on it now, right? That's not the way I looked at it back then. That's me looking at it now with you. Listen, you grow from every experience. You could either grow from it or not, and I chose to grow from it. It helped me, you know, change my style, because I wasn't able to do after injury a lot of the things I was accustomed to be able to do. So it kind of shifted me, it grew me, it helped me. You know, I had to adapt my game to the limitations that the injury. You know, so it was a huge learning experience for me. I still learn from it every day. You know, I still have to, you know, nurse that injury and take care of myself to be able to continue to do what I do. So it's been a really life-altering thing. you know, you can take it as, oh my God, you know, a negative, or you can take it as if it was a growing experience to help me learn, and you move forward from that. And that's kind of the attitude that I've taken. Not, you know, there was a time when I was so pissed, you know, that I never really got to show how good I was due to the fact that, you know, I had these limitations and these injuries. And the time that was spent recovering and all that, you know, I was so pissed. I felt like I just missed my window. And I was so angry about that because I felt that it defined me as a person. And it was just, I didn't realize that that's just one aspect of my life, one portion of my life. And although I did not achieve a lot of the goals that I wanted to achieve, it does not mean that I didn't grow from that experience and become a better human being because of it. And I acquired an immense amount of knowledge, training and participating in all those fights. You know what I mean? I feel like I've got such an incredible wealth of knowledge to share, that is what is exciting me rather than is bringing me down that I didn't get to prove that I was the best, or, you know, in my own mind anyway, not demonstrate that I was the best, you know?
That's truly all that matters, you know. I try to tell, you know, I'm 53 years of age, so I try to convince some of these younger generational fighters. It's not about, I actually think they should do away with the win and loss columns. I don't think that aspect should be in the sport, because anybody that steps up on a mat, in an octagon or in a ring, is already a champion. You know, people say, oh, well, that's a participation trophy aspect. No, it's not. A warrior deserves his credit, you know, and each one is trying to, you know, truly define their craft. You know, there was a fight. I'm going to ask one or two more fight questions, and then we'll get where we need to be. But you had an opportunity, and you defeated the UFC lightweight champion, and former WEC featherweight title challenger, Jens Pulver. That's an opportunity that most people don't get in life. When you look back at that fight now, Professor, would you say that was really a fight that defined you, not just in the cage, but to yourself, not only as a warrior, but as a man?
You know what's funny about that fight was that the fight was not even the biggest problem I was dealing with personally, right? The fight, I mean, listen, I wanted to fight Jens a long time, you know, for a long time, and I'm super happy I actually got a chance to fight him, because when I was coming up and I got hurt, he was the best guy in the world. So for me, it was kind of validation, in a sense, that I was the best guy in the world, you know, at that time. Because I respect Jens, I like Jens, but I would have beat him at any point of in his career. Whether some people say, well, at the end of his career, he was faltering a little bit more than back then. I'm like, I feel that I would have beaten Jens at any point in his career. His best point of his career, best point of my career, I would have beat him, in my opinion, you know, with all due respect. But that's just me, you know. That's just me proving to myself that I could do it. But in my personal life, it was tough, man. My longtime team, I broke away from my longtime team. You know, all my training partners, all my trainers, everything, all the people that I've known my entire career, we parted ways unceremoniously at the time. And, you know, I'm happy to say that we're cool now, but, man, it took a long time for me to get over that. So that was also a growing experience. So when I won that fight, that was the first time I'd been away from those guys forever. Like, that was the first fight that I ever had that they weren't in my corner. And it was really hard. It was incredibly difficult for me to, you know, I had such a comfort level that I didn't have anymore. And so I had to grow and deal with that. And as far as the fight, I mean, listen, I didn't script it for the fight. I took no damage. I got the fight I wanted as quickly as I wanted. I got a submission win, and that was that. So I was happy with all that. But man, in my personal life, the training camp leading up to it, it was It was tough, man. I had to start all over. I had to start from scratch all over again, and it was really hard on me emotionally. I'm glad that the result went the way it went, because there was a lot going on at that time in my life that was really hard.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, I kind of want to jump from the cage to the mat in the essence of a way. And, you know, I've had the opportunity to interview John Velasco Ohuono, Todd Medina, certain aspects of the early days of jiu-jitsu. What was it like for you, Professor, to be under Carlson Gracie, and what type of aspect do you feel that he defined you, you know, best through his knowledge and through his teachings?
The Carlson team was great for me when I was coming up. You know, I came from college wrestling, so I already had a pretty aggressive and in-your-face style. I had high school and college wrestling coaches. Well, particularly one of my high school coaches was really into that Iowa style, so I kind of developed a somewhat similar Iowa style, really in-your-face and aggressive style. So when I got, you know, so when I met Rodrigo and I started training at his academy, and I was around Carlson's guys, it was the same. They had the same mentality. So for me, it was a really easy fit, a very natural fit. I didn't feel like I was really compromising anything by being on that team. It was just a really good fit for me. You know, it's just that overall attitude of dominance, and it was very heavily based on transitional jiu-jitsu, creating opportunities through transition and movement. That's kind of with an aggressive style, and I always wanted to finish everybody, you know. So that was kind of my belief systems were right in line, particularly at the time, to be on that team in particular. It was just a really good fit for me at the time.
You know, later on in life, you kind of actually, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, bro, I told you I'm the Barbara Walters, I find out everything. You know, you kind of married into the Gracie family. What was it like marrying into the Gracie family and having your wife being one of the greatest defined aspects in jiu-jitsu at that time when you did marry her?
Well... First of all, the family was always good to me. They were always very cool with me. Hito and Hinder, Halleck was cool with me too. I met Kroiler. I really like Kroiler. You know, Hito was really, really good to me. He spent a lot of time helping me, and we trained a lot together, and Hinder as well. Those guys are great guys to me. Her dad was always really nice to me. Her mom was always really nice to me. Henzo was super cool every time I went by there. So as far as the family being cool with me, they were all super cool and super, super generous with their time and stuff with me. So, but as far as like a team, it was a very different mentality. It was the other side of the pancake for sure. As far as philosophy and how they taught and everything else. Hidong and Henner are some of the best teachers in the world. Those guys are really great teachers. And it really shifted my thinking a little bit, actually quite a bit of you know, what jiu-jitsu is and what we're really trying to do here. And I always wanted to learn it because I watched Toys Fight, right? I wanted to not take damage. I wanted to be able to grapple people. I wanted to be able to submit people. So for me, Horse was kind of like, yeah, I want to be able to do that, right? He didn't take a whole lot of damage, and the way those guys think about it, and the way Elio thinks about jiu-jitsu is very different than the way Carlson thinks about it. Carlson was about domination. Elio was about, listen, you're going to end up in these bad spots. You got to learn how to survive and eventually be able to escape and then win, right? So the mentality is completely different. You know, it's completely different philosophically. Even though they're breaking the same arms and jerking the same necks, the method to get to the submission I feel is a little bit is quite different strategically from the way I learned it from Carlson and Rodriguez.
Oh yeah, most definitely. And you're a hell of a practitioner. You know, what truly led you down that? I mean, you've always been a part of the mat, but what really defined you, Professor, and has kept you on the mat, you know, all the way up to this point in time?
There's different phases in my life that I was doing different things, you know. Until I was done fighting when I was, I think, 34, my goal was very much be the best fighter in the world. So then I retired from fighting, and I opened up an academy, and I was kind of trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I had another academy before, and it was very much based on how the mentality was Carlson's style, right? So then I fought, and then I opened up another academy, and then now I was getting heavily influenced from Hidan and Henner and the way they were doing things, which is great. There's nothing wrong with the way they do things. And towards, in the past several years, towards the end, up until right before then, I started to shift back a little bit, still pretty, very heavily influenced by the boys, but I was starting to shift my mentality back to the way it kind of once was. And I was comfortable with that change and that shift. I felt that the way the boys were able to break down technique and really understand technique really gave me an understanding of technique from a very different lens. So for me, I get bored. I get bored pretty easily with jiu-jitsu. I get bored, and so I always like to shift and change and morph into what is my next evolution. Shed the old skin and wear your new skin. And I was kind of in that transition, making those shifts, and then all hell. Then everything went to hell in the handbasket.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going to go next. You know, I watched a live feed with a good brother of yours, Kevin James Gonzalez, and it touched me. These are the types of shows that I really like to do because, you know, you defined yourself in life. And you just defined yourself not only as a warrior, but as a man. And what most people don't get nowadays is you could have plenty of sunny days, but as you and I both know, that one day darkness will come. And it's how we handle that darkness that truly defines who we are. You know, what was it like? Take me through that experience. Take my listeners through that walk. If it's not too hard, how was it? And how hard was it on you and your family and your loved ones and your, practitioners and all aspects in your life? How hard was it the day that you found out and were diagnosed with colon cancer?
Oh, man. There was multiple problems. Going on. That was the second problem that I was having to deal with. I was already dealing with one problem. You know about cancer until you have to really know about cancer, right? So everyone kind of knows, what cancer is, and they're trying to find a drug that's going to cure cancer, which to me now is so laughable. It's insane. So, I mean, at first it was like denial. Well, I didn't have cancer because they're like, well, you have a growth, but we don't know if it's cancerous yet, but it looks cancerous. And I was like,
yeah.
But of course it's not, right? And she's just kind of like, I'm like, if you had to give me like a percentage of like, okay, you think this is cancer or you think this is not cancer, like give me a percentage. She's like 80-20. I'm like, 80-20 is pretty good. I'm like, she goes, no. I was, what do you mean? She goes, no, 80% that it is and 20% that it isn't. I was like, say what? I was like, say what? And she was like, yeah, my doctor. And, you know, so they took the sample or the whatever, biopsy or whatever, and then I got the result back like 2 days later. And, you know, of course I'm thinking it's not. How could I get it? And then, it, you know, now I understand 100% why I got it. I just didn't even know it was possible. There was no way, like, I remember when I went into the doctor's office, they're like, you know, they're trying to find out how the hell I got it because I had no family history and I'm an athlete, and, you know, I was vegan. I was eating some meat, but mostly vegan. They're like, how the hell did you get it? Right? And there was one glaring reason, so... And I didn't even understand that one thing related to the other. I didn't know anything about cancer. You kind of know. I thought I knew something. I didn't know anything. So, initially it was denial, and then I say the line in the movie. I said, "How do you fix it? Like, how do you fix it? Like, I'm not thinking, you know." And then it comes back, and it's like, "Yuck, stage 3." I'm like, "Oh my god." Okay, so how do we fix this problem? Like, what happened here? Stage 3. I knew stage 3 was bad. I knew stage 3 was not good. Because I didn't know about the stages and what each meant, but I knew 3 was really close to 4, and I knew 4 was really, really bad.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, you got to have surgery. I have surgery, and I swear to God, I had surgery, and surgery, man, oh, man. Like, I had knee surgeries, I've had nose surgeries. I've had a lot of surgeries in my time. And, man, oh, man, let me tell you something. It hurt. It hurt. It hurt a lot. When I remember waking up from surgery, not understanding the level of pain I was in. I was like, oh, my God, I didn't even know you could have this much pain. And I was, you know, when I woke up and I was at the hospital, I still had an IV, and so they were giving me drugs. I was like, oh my god, like I can't believe it. Was like speechless kind of pain, like holy cow kind of pain. And I have a pretty high pain tolerance. I fought, I'm not a bitch. I didn't bitch out of anything, right? And holy cow, it hurt, dude. So, you know, I'm recovering from surgery. I think I go back like a week or two later, you know, the post op checkup. And I still have, you know, the open wound, and, you know, I still have the staples in. And it was a pretty small incision, but it's still, right? And I go, okay, great, now what? And then they go, well, we're gonna, you know, you got to do an appointment with the nutritionist. I'm like, yeah, that was something I was already going to do. I just changed my diet to help me get through this. I'm okay, and what else? And then they're like, yeah, you got to start your 6 months of chemo. I'm like, chemo? My chemotherapy? Like, I was like, my head was still, Don, like I said, my personal life was a complete train wreck. So I was so consumed with that, that cancer was like a kind of like a secondary thing for me. I was dealing with other stupidities. And chemo, when they said chemo, dude, I that's when it got real for me, right? Surgery, I've had lots of surgeries, no problem. Pain was all right, but no problem. It'll heal, keep it clean, keep it, you know, no big deal. Relax and just let it heal. When they said chemo, I about crapped myself. I'm like, I'm not doing chemo. The first thing out of my mouth was I'm not doing chemo. For sure. That's the last stop before, last toll before exit. Chemo for most people. And I knew it was poison. So in my fighting career, especially towards the end of my career, I was, dude, I could not recover the way I used to recover when I was in my 20s. I took 3 years off. All of a sudden, I come back. Dude, I can't recover. I'm working my ass off and just feeling terrible all the time, just always sore and not recovering. So long story short, I started looking into diet as a way to help recovery, right? Well, let me eat clean. I joke and tell people I won 2 world championships eating Del Taco and Taco Bell. That's a fact. You know, I didn't know anything about nutrition. And I came across the Gerson therapy. So I had done some research. I kind of got a little bit fascinated with it, so I did some additional research when I heard about the therapy. I didn't get into what it was doing, but or how to do it, but I ended up looking into it. I was interested. And I knew it was out there, and I knew it cured cancer. I didn't know if it cured my cancer, but I knew it cured cancer. So I started looking into it, and we decided to do the Gerson therapy rather than do chemo.
Yeah, I fortunately know what you're talking about. It has a way of, I don't know. I was already sick. I'm a diabetic, you know, and so I had already lost my leg and had a feeding tube and multiple other issues. But I was always taught in life, you lay down, you stay down. So I always worked. I kept going. You know, I shot a fight with 357 or 457 staples in my abdomen. You know, I shot a fight of Zach Cummings. And, you know, I look back at it now and I'm going, I was such a pendejo. But, you know, the things about it is when I went into the doctor one time and I'd been feeling a lump underneath my neck and it was a lymph node and it hurt like hell. And so I went in and they did a boring and comes back, it's lymphoma. I was like, okay, well, what do we do? I'm like you, what do we do from here? And so I ended up having to have surgery. They took out a bunch of lymph nodes and all kinds of crap. And I was like, okay, cool, it's all over. No, it was just the beginning. And so I'm like, I'm not doing that crap. You know, I don't care. I'm not going to do it. And ultimately I broke down and did. Only for, probably a year later, it came back. Had to undergo surgery again and went through the same process all over again. And, you know, then I was cancer-free. And I was like, great, man, you know, I did it. I beat this, you know. And then one day I woke up and I had a lump in my face. I was like, what the hell? And so I go to the doctor and they take a biopsy of it and it's cancer in my face. So it's right between my nose and my eyes. So they cut down my face. They removed the tumor. And, you know, I didn't have to undergo any further treatment or anything. I was cool with that. And I was like, all right, cool. You know, life is going on. You know, bad things happen, but I got lucky. And about 6-7 months later, I wake up one day, and this is the most comical part about it, is I start feeling a pain in my left breast. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And from that day to 3 days from that, I went from being like a normal dude to looking like a 13-year-old girl going through puberty, growing a boob. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? So I go in, I have to get a mammogram. And I end up having breast cancer. Make a long story short, I had to have a mastectomy. And I'm sitting there going, I'm a man. How can this happen to me? And, you know, I've been cancer-free, thank God, ever since. But, you know, the process, the aspects of it, when you sit back now and you think about it and you get that one moment that you look in the mirror and you look at this tattered path that you've you've walked, what would you say has truly defined and your greatest takeaway as a man in overcoming all the obstacles that you had to go through in the last few years?
I have perseverance, man. You know, you have to really want to fight to be alive. I knew I had two girls that I had to take care of. So losing is not an option. Failure is not an option. That was the same mentality in the Alberto Crane that I had. I said, losing is not an option. I'm not losing. You know, I'm going to do what I can. What I can control, I'm going to control. If I have to be disciplined and do 12 juices a day, I'm going to be disciplined and do 12 juices and four treatments a day. That's what it takes. I am going to do my part. My part is to dot the I's and cross the T's. It's in God's hands if I make it or not. But at least on my end, I'm going to work. And I had an incredible support system, my mom and my sister. My sister is still my right hand. And my mom, without my mom, I would have been out on the street. You know, I was going through a horrendous divorce, and still am. So, you know, I did my part. I worked. You know, I put my head down. My sister and I learned the diet. Systemize the entire diet to where it's, you know, I'm going to make videos of how I did it and what I do and stuff. That's something I want to give back is what I've learned, right, and how I did it, because it's a tough diet to follow. I mean, it's no joke. So you have to be really disciplined and you have to save a lot of time. So that's what I did. And I didn't want to die. Dying was not an option for me. I had two kids I had to take care of. So dying was not okay in my book. So I did what I could. I controlled what I can control. And thank God it all worked out, man. I was very lucky. And I know I was lucky.
You know, then you did something just recently, and I think it helps, explains you, you know, it defines you. You did a documentary. What was it like for you to open your life, open up who you are in that aspect in a documentary?
I tell you what, I'm trying not to be. I'm learning not to be, but I'm a bit of a pessimist when it comes to stuff like this. It came out a lot better than I thought it was going to. I was really blown away. I spoke with Kevin on Saturday, and I told him, bro, you guys did a great job. Like, you guys far surpassed what I thought that was going to be like. You know, I thought you did a great job. Opening up for me I didn't find it particularly hard to open up, but I felt that the story was worth sharing, and I hope people enjoy it. You know, I don't know what my calling in life is going to be, but maybe it's to help people through cancer, man. I don't know. If it is, I'm totally cool with it. It's pretty rewarding, not to sound like a jerk, but pretty rewarding to kind of prove my doctors wrong. I have such a joy every time I walk into my oncologist's office. I'm like, aren't you the one that says that I was committing suicide? The dude literally told me, you are committing suicide. 3 months later, I walked into his office. It's clean blood work. I said, now what are you going to tell me? So for me, that was probably one of the most satisfying things, is to be able to do that. I don't know about you, but that's the way I felt.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. You know, there's aspects of life that a lot of people don't pay attention to anymore, or, you know, they don't really understand it. We're a little bit older, so we truly do. We know what family, we know what the good old days were like, days that will never be seen again. But would you say between your mom, your sister, and Kevin James Gonzalez, would you say that it allowed you to walk from the dark and return to the light in certain aspects in your life?
Yeah, man. I went through a transformation in the past 2 years. So Kevin did a good job of telling the story. Without my sister, I wouldn't be here. Like literally, I would not have made it. Like that, without my sister and my mom, I am very confident to say that I probably wouldn't be alive. We would be real close to dying. So
it's pretty heart wrenching.
I think Kevin did a great job, you know, exceptionally well, a great job of telling a story. I've had several people say, why isn't it longer? anything is possible. Anything is possible, but if we can make another one or make it longer, it's possible. Anything's possible. We'll see how this one's received, and if people want to hear more, then I'm open to the possibility.
Oh, yeah. I think the world needs to hear your story. You know, you're a tremendous facet in all aspects of life. I mean, everybody looks at the internet, they look at television, and they think that's who the fighter is. They think that's what defines a fighter. But it's just a mere look into who the warrior is, and not even really touching on the man. Most shows today are just the standardized Wikipedia topology shows, or they just want to bring up moments in your life that truly are irrelevant because everybody already knows them. You know, it sounds like the documentary is pretty successful. It sounds like it added another layer to who you are. And that's instrumental in overcoming obstacles and certain aspects in life. What intrigues me is the thoughts and the perceptions of people and after all it's said and done, because like I said, I've got many stories from many warriors in life. As you know, Todd Medina, Daniel Cormier, and a lot of others have shared aspects like you're doing tonight. And that's what I love about the show is people get to hear you. They get to understand who you are. And that's why I created this show, because I wanted people to understand, you know, that life isn't all lollipops and roses, that there is another side to each and every warrior. What I want to know, though, is at the end of the day, you know, you sit at the end of the bed and for some reason you look into the mirror and you get a reflection, that one brief reflection into the man, into the life, into the aspects that you've walked. Who do you see?
I honestly see somebody I'm pretty proud of, man. I'm not, you know, just like everybody, I've made mistakes, I've done things I regret. But my whole perspective and perception on life has completely changed. I talk to, and without my family and without everything that's, all the blessings that I've had, none of this would be possible. But I was talking to a buddy of mine, one of my students, Alex, and it was funny because he comes in, he comes in to train, and he's just kind of like, I'm exhausted. I'm like, why are you so tired? Oh, I, you know, helped my buddy. I helped my buddy do yard work or something. And I go, you know, he's a successful guy. He's married, successful, you know, his wife. They're great family, right? And he goes, doing yard work all day. And I looked at him and I go, I'm like, do you enjoy that? Like, some people like that. Like, I'm not that guy, but some people, you know, get a sense of, you know, what do they say? A sense of soothing sense from being outside. It's hard work and stuff. And I'm like, I'm not one of those guys, but God bless you if you are. And he goes, no, I hate it. And I look at him like, well, listen, you're a successful guy. You could have paid $100 to get that done. And he kind of looks at me and thinks about it. I go, if you would have enjoyed it, I would have said, yeah, do it yourself. I'm like, Javi, hate that kind of work. And because I've gotten this new lease on life, I don't want to be spending my afternoons doing things that I don't want, or full days and being exhausted. I like, you know, my perspective now is, if I don't want to do it, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do the things in this life that I feel I want to do. And if I don't want to do it, I would rather not. And if it's something as simple as $50 or $100 and you have it, like it's not a problem for him. I'm like, why would you voluntarily torture yourself throughout the day? What else could you have done with your day that could have been much more enjoyable and pleasant? And that's kind of the way I'm thinking about life now. I'm not, if I don't have to do it, you know, I would rather do something I enjoy doing. I enjoy riding my bike. You know, I got into cycling and stuff, and I really enjoy it. I would rather do that than be doing that yard work. And I feel that if you're living a life that with the people around you that love you and you enjoy being around, you know, that's the way life is supposed to be. You're supposed to surround yourself with the people that you want to be around. You're supposed to, you know, enjoy the time that you have on this planet. Because let me tell you, like, when you go through a scare like I went through, it changes you. You start thanking God every morning when you wake up that you're still alive, that you're getting another opportunity to have a life on this amazing planet, you know. And when I wake up every morning, I'm grateful. When I look in the mirror, I'm grateful to be alive. I'm in a way that I really didn't, I took for granted before the scare. And again, like, all the stuff that was going on in my personal life was incredibly taxing on me and incredibly taxing on my health. And I realized that I don't have to live that way under these stressful conditions constantly. Like, enjoy my life, enjoy the people I have around, really kind of look into people's eyes and really try to connect with people. I have a really hard time with that just because I'm so introverted for the most part. But I'm trying to connect with people more than I have in the past. It's something that's incredibly hard for me to do. But, you know, I feel that that's what we're here to do, is to touch people and to help people. That's, you know, you're supposed to be loving people and taking care of people and helping each other out and not trying to, you know, screw people over or sleep with their wife or, you know, and think my whole perspective is a lot different now, based on the lessons that life has taught me.
Yeah. I love that because I'm kind of fall under that same category. You know, it's weird because we both have chosen these, you know, extroverted lives and lifestyles, but we both are truly introverts. And people don't get that.
Yeah,
I am. I'm so happy that you said that because a lot of people don't understand me. And I try to explain to them, you know, yeah, I'm an extrovert. I go and I shoot fights because I'm still an active photographer. You know, and I go and I do these, but I don't go to the after parties. I don't do any. I just go because it's my job. I go work and
yeah,
I shake everybody's hands and take pictures with people. But the true me, not five people know where I live. I would rather sit in my house and chill and edit pictures or video or just whatever. But I would rather do it, you know, alone or with my wife or my son. You know, I don't let the outside world into my life. And I'm kind of learning, but I'm an old dog. You know, you really can't change me at 53. But I feel that I see enough people every weekend that on my off time, it's my time. And that might seem selfish, but that's the way life is. You know, I dig that you're that way. I truly do, because you're one of the few people that I've ever interviewed that actually knows exactly what I'm talking about. You know, where can people find the documentary? Where can people see it? You know, because I think it's tremendous, and I think it's a side of you that people really need to see.
We just launched it on my YouTube channel, which is Gaby Jiu-Jitsu, Harvey Vasquez Jiu-Jitsu, on YouTube. I just posted it up, I think, earlier today. The response has been great. You know, when you let people in like that, I don't know what kind of a response I'm going to get. You know what I mean? But I'm hoping it's a positive one, and it has been positive. But again, I'm the pessimist inside me, which I try to not bring up, always thinks, well, what if people think X or people think Y, or you know, and I'm getting to the point, and I've gotten to the point in a lot of things in my life where I just don't care. I just don't care what people think. And you know, the people that know me, and there are going to be people out there that may or may not, there's always going to be haters. I'll say that, you know, there's always going to be haters, and I'm always afraid of that because I'm really self-conscious about that stuff, man. But at this point, I really don't care what people think. So I'm going to tell it because I think it's an important story to tell. I think people are getting poisoned out there, and I want to show people that there's a different way.
Yeah, I love that aspect because you're so right. You know, people always used to say, let my haters be my motivators. And I used to be cool with that, you know, Professor. I was cool with that for many, many years. And I'm the type of dude, I'm not going to turn my back on anybody. I'm not going to do anybody wrong. Hell, you know, even with this show, my sponsors pay for the airtime, but I actually do the show for free. You know, and a lot of people don't get that, but I wanted to get back to a sport that put food on my table. You know, that was my train of thought. I want to get back to the fighters and an aspect that they gave to me. You know, because they put a roof over my head. They put food in my stomach. And I feel that I have to give back. I have to share. But at the same time, you know, after 24 years being in the business, that let your haters be your motivators, you can take that and you can shove it where the sun don't shine, because I'm like you. I honestly don't care anymore. But it gets a little old. It gets a little stagnated. You know, you're a tremendous man. Everything that you've done from the moment you were, I guess the best way to say it, stepped into wrestling at a very young age, you had great intent. You had a great upbringing through your mother and through your sister. You went through many obstacles in life. You stepped in paths that many wish they could only have a tenth of what your successes were. But at the end of the day, Professor, when it's all said and done, how would you like to most be remembered?
Man.
Well, you, Barbara Walters, brother.
You know, I don't know, man. I wanna be known as a good guy. You know, I wanna be known as somebody who wasn't really monetarily motivated. We all need money to survive, but I I'm not perfect, but I think that I've done the right thing in my life definitely a lot more times than not. And again, I don't know what the future is going to hold, but I'm pretty passionate about health, and I'm pretty passionate about what the hell's going on right now with people's diets and what is happening overall. Like, there's a real big picture, and the information's out there. But this whole system is jacked, man. And the way everything goes down with the healthcare system and with diet and the FDA and all that, it's pretty irritating. And I don't think that we are taught enough in our lives about what health really is, what life is about. Life is about loving other people. Life is about helping other people. Life is about experiencing this world, this planet, and not being connected to your phone and not being connected on another world. Because believe me, I know all about it. I for a very long time, my phone was my best friend, and it was really one of the things that helped me get through a very, very difficult personal time in my life. But when I've unplugged from that, now I see that having those people that are close to me, having positive people around me, having people that are not trying to constantly bring me down, having people that are out to protect me and not take advantage of me or hurt me, I've just got a whole new perspective on life. And I want to be known as somebody that, listen, if my story motivates people to do better, if my story motivates people to follow Jesus, if my story motivates people to change their diet, take care of themselves, not just physically, not just with your diet, but internally, spiritually, I myself am going through a transformation right now in my life. And it's a hard question for me to answer because I'm in the middle of really a renewance of my life at this particular point. So when you ask me that, I'm like, well, I'm kind of in transition, so I really don't know. I mean, listen, it's great that I fought, and I put so much stock in fighting for so long, and I put my entire identity into fighting for so long, and my heart and soul and everything I have into fighting, that it took me some time to transition from that to teaching. And then I transitioned from teaching to understanding what my health needed and what my body and what my mind and my heart and my soul and my spirit needed to be able to stay alive. And now I'm in the transition after that of building the life that I want to build, having God at my side and guiding me through. So this is very new to me. So when you ask me that, I don't know. I don't know. That's a tough question at this particular. If you ask me that in a year or 2 years, I'll absolutely have a much better answer than at this moment and at this stage in my life.
Most definitely, and I completely understand that because, you know, like I said, my health hasn't been the greatest, and you know, I know where you're coming from. We'll leave it at that. We'll put it in a different aspect. You know, I'm only going to ask you one or two more questions because I've had you longer than I thought I would, but you're such a tremendous aspect that I don't think one show can truly define what you've done and who you are. We'll change the subject, the question up a little bit different. If you had to write on a piece of paper Yeah, well, hell, that might even be a bad way to do it, a bad analogy, but I'll go ahead and ask it anyway. If you had to write on a statement, a piece of paper, a statement, to be put in a time capsule for future generations to open up and look back on, what would that statement say, Professor?
to be honest with you, you know, I was an atheist for 41 years. Didn't believe in God. I was a materialist to the core. I believed in science. And there was no way that I would ever believe that there was a God. There was no way, though, like, even hearing myself say it now, I think it's still difficult. But I would definitely say that don't be fooled by the greedy nature and the controlling nature of how society is run, and just know that there absolutely is a God. There absolutely is. We're finding more and more proof of that every day. And it's completely bizarre that I would say that. But, I mean, I was such a non-believer, and God has been so big for me in my life since I discovered him and I met him, that I would absolutely have to share that with other people. I know that sounds like there might be people who haven't talked to me in a minute that hear me say that and might be going like, it's not the same. Maybe it's a different hobby of asking. You know, but
I love it, brother, you know.
But yeah, I was pretty stubborn to the fact that there absolutely wasn't, and I am just as adamant now that there absolutely is.
That's a beautiful thing, you know. We, you know, people that are younger, they may not understand, but, you know, you turn 18, you get a little, and I hate this to put it this way, but you get a little hair on your balls and you think you're a man. And then you hit 25 and 30 and you think you know everything there is to know in life. And you hit 40 and it kind of has you looking back and reflecting on things, and then you get to where I'm at, you hit 50, and you realize that you don't know shit. And pardon my French, but, you know, that's a God's honest truth. You know, you look at life totally different, and you understand the mistakes, the wrong paths, and all the aspects that defined you really aren't the way you saw them. You know, Professor, it was truly an honor to be able to have you on here and let you open up and share who you are and allow me to dig into you and certain aspects and share with my listeners. You know, it's truly an honor for me to be able to share part of your story. Like I said, we could do multiple shows and we couldn't touch on all the facets or aspects that you've brought to the sport or any genre of the sport. But the humility and the integrity that you have is second to none. You know, for you to sit here and say, I would tell you I didn't believe in God, but now I'll tell you I believe in God, that's tremendous, because we all come to a 360 in life, and we all come to a realization of who we are and what life means to us, and it sounds like you found that path. You know, it's an honor for me to be able to share your story and have you on my show, and I feel humbled and honored, brother. I'm going to pass the mic to you. If you have anything that you would like to add to the program, any websites, any friends or family that you would like to thank, or any sponsors or affiliations, the floor is yours, Professor.
Yeah, you know, you know, I got to thank God. Like, seriously, I know that sounds like I'm a Bible thumper or all that, but, man, you guys just didn't understand where I was. You guys just didn't understand where I was. I was in a pretty deep place, man, a pretty dark place. I have to thank my family, my mother and my sister. My sister, who was here working with me, she was in my kitchen 12 hours a day for a while until we figured out how to do this diet, figured out the whole program. My mom for all of her incredible, like, she's my hero, you know. So she's the rock. She's always been the rock in my life. She's always, you know, made my life very comfortable and show me how to really work, right? I have to thank Kevin James also. He did a great job with the documentary. Again, far exceeding my expectations. I had a lot of help getting through this diet. I had people supporting me on a GoFundMe to get all the equipment for the diet. I have to thank everybody who contributed to that. Don, I'm incredibly blessed and incredibly fortunate to be here. I'm not even lying. A lot of people, without the love and support of everybody who contributed to that, my students who I adore and I love dearly, who have always been supportive and have been incredible through this entire process, and understanding, you know. Sarah Page, who was managing my diet, who was from the Gerson, who was a certified practitioner under the Gerson Institute. Again, it was incredibly humbling for me to have to sit there and to take help from people. And to have to sit back from surgery to everything else that happened, to I had to rely on people to take care of me, which that was really hard for me to do. For me to have to do that was really, really hard. I've always just kind of been my own person and did my own thing and didn't rely on anybody. And you know what I'm saying? So that was an incredibly humbling experience, and I'm very thankful for the people who took the time to listen to me when I was hurting and gave me advice, friends of mine who gave me advice through a very difficult time, to Sarah who supported me throughout this process.
Yes. Are you still there? Javier, are you still there?
Hello?
Oh, there you go. I don't know what happened.
I don't. Yeah, it started. Yeah. Well, anyways. Again, I'm very happy and very fortunate to be alive. So apparently that changes you, son.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah,
that's
a big one.
I don't know what happened with the keyboard. I apologize for that. I don't know what. The board kind of went crazy for a moment. That's what, you know, it would be a live show if you didn't have technical difficulties. But, you know,
yeah,
I look at life. I love doing live. I wouldn't do that pre-scripted, pre-recorded crap and cut it up because it wouldn't be the same thing. You know, I want to leave today's show on a note that Jacob Stitch Durant taught me in life. And being that I'm probably a little bit older than you, you know, I realized that coming from the old aspects of the sport that I needed to change who I was. I just didn't know how. And like I told you, I'm an introvert in an extroverted world. And I do 99.9% of what I do and don't expect anything in return. I don't expect accolades because I do it because it's who we are and how life should be. But, you know, Jacob has taught me that I need to share with the world what I've done. And I'm learning to come around. And it sounds like you're learning to come around, too, and share aspects of yourself with the world that the world truly needs to hear. You know, Professor, having you on my show tonight was really a bucket list show, and I really didn't realize it until after I heard you speak. The walk that you've been on has truly inspired me and probably many, many others. You know, it's a true honor for me to have an aspect like you on my show. You're defining yourself as you go in life. You're defining the world. You're defining your students. And that, my friend, is what life is really all about. With that being said, I would really like to thank you for joining the show. I'd like to have you on again in the future. You know, hopefully you enjoyed the show. I'm hoping you did.
No, listen, I had a great time. You asked me some challenging questions. You know, I was like, you made me think about it, man. So that's good.
Well, you've been through a lot, my friend, and thank you for sharing with my listeners your journey, and hopefully we'll get you on again soon. And until then, God bless you, my brother. It's been an honor and a privilege to have you on, Professor.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. We'll talk soon, Don. Thank you for having me.
All right. God bless you, Professor. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Professor Javier Vasquez. Man, I don't know what happened with the phone lines, but hey, at least it didn't happen during the interview. I want to thank Kevin James Gonzalez personally for helping me get this interview. Wow. Tremendous young man. You know, with that being said, I want to thank my sponsors, Finished MMA, Juan Martinez, Cutman for Hire with Jacob Stitch-Duran, and Juan Ramirez, Bite Me Mouth Guards with Joe Rice, and the 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddie. Without the Dream Team, we wouldn't have a show. And, man, thank you, Professor. That was a tremendous look into your life. With that being said, since we're talking about moms, I'm going to go ahead and take us out with a little Tupac. Have a good night, and God bless.
You all appreciate it. When I was young, me and my mama had beef. 17 years old, kicked out on the street. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was a fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Said tears with my baby sister. Over the years, we was poor than other little kids. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong, we blamed mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hell, hugging on my mama from a jail cell.